Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce our fabulous speaker here, Glenn.
Oh my God. There was a time where I really liked doing this. Now, I know how honest I have to be and how transparent that it's important to be transparent and tell the truth, because it's not about me today. It's not about what I'm supposed to be giving you. It's supposed to be about what I've learned here that you've given me. You know, and I can be like a bit of a mess when you start to think about all the wonderful things that you have given me. The unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I've come to grow to love. And it didn't happen overnight for a slow burner like me, who is very stubborn, very hard-headed, and it was my will all the time, you know? And I don't say that lightly, you know? I think we're some of the strongest, loving, most capable people in the world. We just use our energy wrong. It's transferred into negativeness, you know, because my disease centers in the mind. It tells me that I'm not good enough. It tells me I don't measure up. It tells me that I have all this fear that is false. And it keeps me from being the person that I need to be, not only for myself, but for you. The reason that I'm here is because I'm not all there, right? Like, do you hear that? That's me to the T. I didn't want to admit that for a long time. That wasn't what I wanted in my life. I wanted my life to just be okay. I wanted to be able to manage it. I wanted to be able to control it. I wanted to be able to pick my destiny, my happiness. And I was just all screwed up all the time. I always looked for my happiness in the wrong places, with the wrong people. It was like, ever since I was a kid, when I grew up, I grew up in Guadalupe, right? Orale. forever. I grew up in Guadalupe, and I got my ass kicked every day. I did, because I was a Caucasian kid. I looked different. I had an afro. And, you know, yeah, right? You picture me with an afro, right? And I looked different than everybody else that was growing up in Guadalupe. And I fought every day at that bus stop. I had to learn how to fight. And I'd come home with bruises and busted lips and all kinds of knots on my head. And my mom would just freak out and she'd be, "What's going on with you? You must have been running your mouth again." And then she'd beat me with a belt. I mean, it was horrible, you know? And I didn't know how to even handle that as a kid. You know, that's just the way I grew up. It was dysfunctional. My mom was a full-blown alcoholic. Now, that doesn't make me alcoholic because my mom's alcoholic. I just want to get that straight right now, all right? And it doesn't make me alcoholic at all. But it didn't help with my coping skills. Because she belittled me. She made me feel less than. I felt victimized. So I took those things that I was learning, those horrible life skills of running and getting in trouble and not doing well in school and acting out as a young teenager, smoking a lot of weed and experiencing drinking and girls and very promiscuous at a very, very early age. And you know, it was just a life full of drama, chaos, and I didn't have a chance, really, at life. You know, it was hard. But I suited up and showed up every day. I went to school. I learned how to adapt to what I had around me and the surroundings that I had. We did not have a lot of money. Everything, I had to start working as a youngster. You know, right away, I had to put my skills to use. And my first job was on an ice cream truck. I was like in eighth grade. Yeah, selling ice cream because I shot the guy's window out of the beef gun. So he felt sorry for me, and he came to my mom and said, "Why don't we give him a job he can pay me back?" And then that turned into something else. And I learned that if I was self-supporting early on in my own contributions, I can buy, like, you know, jeans and shoes and stuff like that. And it, I mean, in some area of my life, I can look at that and say, those are good qualities of a young kid, to be able to get out there and get after it, you know, and not be afraid of making a little dollar, you know, nothing wrong with that. And it was horrible, it was hard. And we moved a lot, you know, we just moved from city to city. And my mom was always running from the police, my dad wasn't in the picture, I had all these abandonment issues that I didn't even know that I had at the time. And it was all just very confusing time for me. I don't know how I made it through high school, and I made it in the Marine Corps. And, you know, when I graduated out of the service, the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, and I learned how to drink really hard in there. And when I got out and came back to Santa Maria, I started viewing my life different because I had a little bit of secureness in my life. Like, I felt some self-esteem because I was in the Marines. Don't you understand who I am? Now I can, you know, I can get after it. But it, my alcoholism just took off, you know. And I was involved in different relationships. I always looked for people that, like women, that would better me, right? Because I was a mess. So I wasn't, like, willing to take and look at me and go back to school, like regular people around me were doing, and get a high school diploma and get a junior, you know, get a some sort of degree or anything like that. I always tried to find girls that were, I thought they would fix me through their good qualities that they had. And I didn't realize later on until I got here that all those things that I was doing, I just ruined so many lives, you know. I've heard a lot of people along the way, God, I hate talking about this stuff, but you got to identify. Ugh, get to recovery already, you know. And it's like, I don't talk a lot about that stuff because it sucks. You know, it's not fun, but that's my truth. You know, I ran away a lot, I panhandled, I lived under bridges, I stole money, I, this is hard, you know. And I could get homeless really well, you know, because I learned how to adapt. I learned how to be a hustler on the street. I knew how to lie and play my game. I knew how to get that dollar. I had to do it early on. And you take this dysfunctional human being and you put him in as an adult with no life skills, and you're not going to be good to anybody. You don't know how to be faithful. You don't know how to be trustworthy. You don't know how to be loving. You don't know how to be caring. You don't have any intimacy skills. You think intimacy is always sex. It's never about trust, love, you know, listening to your partner, understanding, being there for them. None of that. It's all about, what am I going to get now? You know, and I was so far from the truth. So far from the truth. And when I came at Alcoholics Anonymous, I was living in Los Angeles. And when I was out in L.A., I wanted to become an actor. That was like one of my, just like, that's what I wanted to do. I always wanted to do it. I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to move to L.A. This is what we're going to do. I studied up in Santa Barbara for a short spread and thought I had some skills and that my ego was this big, but my insecurities were even bigger, right? You know how that works, right? The inferiority complex. And when I moved down there, the actors went on strike. I couldn't get any work at all. And I ended up being in sales. And I never looked back, you know. And as I pursued a career in sales, I started making some decent money, but then I got hooked on cocaine. And that whole marijuana maintenance and party on the weekend only and all that went right out the window. And it was on. And I couldn't look back. And when I took that first hit off that pipe and I blew it out, it was over. I knew I was hooked. And the next 2 years of my life, between 28 and 30, were the most miserable years of my life. And I was running from me. I didn't want to look at what was going on with Glenn. I had all this garbage. Look at the way I grew up. I'm just walking around like a trash can. I had no idea that I got all this stuff going on inside of me. Right? And I'm acting out with behaviors that you don't want to even share about in public. It's not good. I'm living a risky lifestyle. I'm looking for the lady of the night all the time. I'm doing cocaine. it's prostitutes and whiskey and weed, and it's just, I think I'm it. That's how delusional this disease can take you. I think I'm the man. 4 o'clock in the morning, burnt pipes on my lips, blood on my thigh, and I got a drinking and alcohol problem. And I don't even know how I'm paying the rent. And I'm suiting up and showing up to work every day, and I look like pale, just so pale. No sleep. People are like, are you okay? Yeah, man, I'm all right, you know. And it's not working out. So I hit my first meeting in 1988 of Cocaine Anonymous. That was the introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the meeting that I ended up in was a two-story house, and there was a lot of actors and directors and writers in this meeting. It was the only non-smoking meeting in Los Angeles, really. It was, you know, it was worked out perfect for me, because if anybody knows me, I'm highly allergic to smoke. Like, that just doesn't work for me. And it was cool, man, all these beautiful people. I was starstruck. I was, you know, thinking I could get some work, you know, right? Well, who's going to hire this guy that can't stay sober? Nobody, man. I'm always showing up. I can't stay sober. I'm raising my hand in meetings constantly. I'm getting 29 days, 30 days. I think one time I got a year. Now, my story is about relapse, and I'm going to take you through this quickly because I'm going to get into recovery, but you don't have to relapse to stay here. It's not everybody's story. I want to get you that perfectly clear, but that is my story, you know? And when I kept relapsing, I wasn't willing to work those steps. I wasn't willing to work those traditions. I wasn't willing to take direction. I still, part of me, liked managing and controlling my behavior because I'm an outlaw. I like the outlaw lifestyle. I like, when it's illegal, I'll do it twice, more than once, you know, easily. And so I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're telling me to scratch out the word alcoholic and put addict, right? Because I'm the cocaine addict. I didn't want to think about even alcohol, but I took it. It was on. It was all about drugs. But later on, as I learned quickly, that I was an alcoholic and that I did have alcoholism and that the manifestation was building in me and I didn't know it. Because I don't see it. I'm not willing to do the work. If I'm not willing to do the work, I don't see what I have. If I don't treat the problem, I don't get another day of serenity in my life. I'm still looking for Mr. Goodbar, right? Like, give me some. Give me some, right? Come on, right? This guy in Fresno, so short, solo guy. He's got like 40-some years of sobriety. Everybody knows him. And I love that guy because he has taught me so much in my life. Just the short phone calls that I've made to him, he's like, what are you doing for your fellow man today, Click? You don't want to hear my shit? Not at all. No. You know, I called him one time. He was going through cancer stuff, and I was going through cancer stuff, and one of my sponsors said, hey, you need to call him because he's going through cancer stuff, so I gave him a call. He's like, hello? And I'm like, hey, man, how you doing? I go, do you know who this is? Yeah, I know who this is. How are you? I'm doing really good, you know, but I'm going through some cancer stuff. You are? What's going on with you? So I go through the thing, and I tell him, and he says to me, he goes, good. I go, well, how are you doing? He goes, you know, it's hard, but I go to meetings. I help people. He goes, let me tell you something. You want to get grateful. You can't be hateful and grateful at the same time. Okay, I got to go. Bye. Like God puts these people in my life. He puts these people in my life to get me out of the way. Just a little bit. So I can see the truth in my life of what it is that I need to do to stay focused for that day. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you stick around a little while, you start doing this deal, what happens is you start to see yourself. You start to see yourself who you really are. And then you become to like yourself and who you need to become. It does not happen overnight. It's not like the quick hit off the cocaine pipe or the late night prostitute on Fifth and Vine. That, you know, that's a quick fix. It's this. And that's me. Okay? I don't like admitting that, but to the core, if I pick up a drink, I'm off. You will not see me back here. And this disease is real. The book describes it as an illness. An illness that thrashes families. That thrashes everything in their life, their employers, the personal relationships. Because I had to live that for proof. I'd come into an AA meeting down in LA and you know, when I couldn't stop raising my hand, these people would come up and they'd hug me and they'd say, man, you don't have to live this way.
You can surrender anything you want.
We got a way of living, and I'd be like, oh man, I want my life, but I don't want to use. I just want my life. I like this lifestyle. No. You got to do the work. And I remember working some of the steps and nothing really intensively, like the book talks about, you know, that we launch out into rigorous action. I didn't know how to do that. And when I moved to Santa Maria, I left there. I had 2 years of sobriety. And I walked into Santa Maria, the 1600 folks. The room's filled with smoke. You got people that look like, man, you know, it's just nuts. I'm just like, this ain't Hollywood, man. I'm not staying here. I can't even stand the cigarette smoke. And I leave and I do the marijuana maintenance program for a while. I do that for like a long time, for a couple of years. And then I start drinking. My drinking starts escalating. Now it's manifesting. I'm not doing the cocaine, okay? What I'm doing is I'm doing something else that I think I can manage. So I'm living in false reality. I'm creating my own like game again. I got my will back. I'm not working any program. I'm not listening to you people. I really don't care. My intentions are okay. They're there. They're good. But I'm not really willing to get involved. That's not what life is about for Glenn. Because don't you know I still got a back pocket plan. I still got a little hustle in me. You know, and you're not going to break me. You know, they talk about running the horse around the trough to get him thirsty enough so he can't drink water. Think about that. You can't make the horse drink. He'll get tired. He's going to get tired. He's going to get thirsty, and I got thirsty. I got tired. I got my ass kicked. 55 years old. Fast 40 now. So I'm 54 years old through 2 marriages, countless vain attempts to prove that I can drink like normal people. And countless attempts to know that if I pick up the drink, what's going to happen, but I do it anyway. That's my definition of insanity. It's doing knowing. It's knowing what's going to happen, but I just take a hell with it. I'm going to do it anyway. It's not like I don't know better, because I do. I've been around the program for all these years. This is 1999. I walk through the door, and I'm beat up. I got a DUI in my pocket, and, you know, here I am. I know where to go, and I'm willing to take the cigarette smoke. I'm willing to fess up and tell somewhat of the truth. I'm not really to get completely honest about that sex inventory that we're so afraid of to share with another human being, so I'm holding on to that. I'm not really honest about the lies and the cheating that I have done in my life, so I just give you a little to see how cool I am, because I want to fit in. I don't know how to fit in. And I start fitting in, and I start chasing, again, women. I start chasing the excitement of sober softball. You know, and there's nothing wrong with this stuff. You can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you're going to pay a price if you keep doing what you're doing and it's not benefiting your spiritual growth. Right? And I do these things, and I'm not going inside. I'm not doing the work. I don't want to do step one. I'm actually on step none for a long time. My favorite number is zero, like a hero. I like that. Step none is my perfect story. If I stay on step none, I don't have to grow. I don't have to feel the pain. And I don't need to grow up. So as I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1999, I get a sponsor named Malcolm. Now I don't know, a lot of you may not know Malcolm, but Malcolm was probably one of the spiritual pillars of Alcoholics Anonymous. He walked his walk. That guy had a lot of good stuff to share. And he held meetings, and he secretary meetings, and he sponsored people, and people loved him. In fact, his foot was right over here. Down here is one of the guys that passed away. And he was a pillar of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he tried to teach me. I did a 4-step with him one time because I wasn't willing to get honest. Remember, the first step in recovery is concede. It is not powerless. It's not less power. It's concede. It's surrender. I conceded to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. If I don't take that step, the rest of them doesn't matter. I will work those steps to the best of no ability. I will only do it because my intentions are right, and I want to make sure that I fit in because I don't belong. But I won't get to the core and the root of the problem, which is Glenn. Selfishness, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. Followed by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. I got all that. Anybody else got that? Yeah, right? If you don't, what are you doing here? I don't get it, you know? Go somewhere. Have a drink. I don't know, you know? You know, but it's true. Like, if I don't take that step, and I'm not telling you that if you're not ready, because the third tradition states the only requirement is for membership is desire. I'm not saying that because this is what you need to do. This is my story. This is how I had to learn it. This is what I needed to do. And because I was so stubborn for so long, I never took the step. But I tried working the steps, and I got to step four, and I remember writing out step four, and I got to the sixth and the seventh. I'm like, I'm not telling them that. I'm not telling them this. I'm not telling them that. And all that. I'm not getting honest about those kind of things and that behavior and those actions that I took in my life. Don't you understand? I'm sick and I'm embarrassed. I'm still being the victim. The reason why I can bring those things up to you now is because I've worked through that stuff. I'm no longer that guy. Right? I'm capable of being that guy. Right? I have to stay humble, practice the steps, work a program, sponsor people, take commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you can humble. Right? If I don't do these things, I'm capable. Quite capable of going back to that. So if an illness doesn't get treated, I'm going to take up a drink. That's what's going to happen. So when I did that fourth step, I remember doing it with him, and you know, I left, and or the fifth step, and I'm on my way home, and there's a spearmint rhino on the corner. I dive in and go get some nut boxes. I graduated. Don't you understand? Like, what the hell just happened? Like, I just did a whole inventory with this guy, and I couldn't get honest. So what do? I go act out. You think I like sharing my crap with you like that? I don't. But somebody in here, I guarantee it, there is somebody sitting in here right now that has a call like that. The book tells me it's so. You know? I am not to be anybody's arbitrator of their sex contract. But if I'm hurting people, if I'm making it an effort to go out and hurt people, just to get what I need to get and break their heart, and I do that over and over and over, that's bad behavior. If I come from a place of intimacy and love and kindness, I can do whatever I want because it's the spiritualness of it all. There's an act of manhood in there, or womanhood, right? I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned not to be so judgmental. I started learning some steps and all of a sudden, I know. Like, now I know, right? Oh, the coffee's not right. Or she's sitting in the wrong bar. She's sitting in my chair. Or, you know what? Nobody's putting money in the seventh tradition basket. How come nobody's putting money in the seventh? How come nobody wants the secretary meeting? What is up with that? What the hell? Doesn't anybody know? It's none of my business, man. I had to learn. That's shitting my business. I take care of Glenn. I do what I gotta do to stay here. Not what you need to do to stay here. You need to find your journey. I cannot make that journey happen for you. This is my journey. This is what I've had to learn so I can stay. You need to learn so you can stay. It's important that we stay for each other. Because without unity, there is no hope. There will be an empty room. I have sat in meetings where they have gone dark because nobody will step up to take another secretary commitment. How sad is that? That's so sad that we're going through that right now. I don't get that. But you know what? It ain't none of my business and I can't save the world. It's not Glenn's job. I've been the secretary. Now let somebody else step up. Best thing in the world too, by the way. If you have fear about that, you should step into it. It'll help you grow. So in 99, I'm bouncing around a lot, but I get on these tangents. Oh, now the coffee's starting. Who made the coffee, by the way? You did? Oh, I'm going to raise my hand and go, I'm a newcomer right now. Woo! Anyway, so I'm getting involved. I'm thinking that I'm doing something here. I collect a one-year cake, a two-year cake, a three-year cake, a four-year cake, a five-year cake. In the sixth year, I start going to Taekwondo. I'm involved in church. I start really focusing on my other plan. Right? I'm a better worker amongst workers because if you're clean and sober and you don't work the steps, your life's going to improve. You're going to show up probably and be a good employee. You're probably going to have some life skills, right? Because you're not full of alcohol and drugs and you're probably going to be more dependent to your partner and everybody else. So I go ahead and I start thinking that I got life together, and I don't need you people anymore. Don't you understand? By the sixth year, you don't see me anymore. In the seventh year, I start taking Glen Valley. I start gambling a little. I came into some pretty big dough back in those days, and I thought the casino was the way to get more dough, because I was in fear about losing the dough that I had, so I thought maybe if I got, how crazy is that? Like, right? Here goes the disease again, manifestation into a whole other area of my life, so we gotta be careful about how much we play those slots. It's very addicting, okay? And I went through that, and Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stopped going to meetings, and had all this money. My brother-in-law was hanging out with me at the time, and we were way down in the San Diego area doing some stuff that we shouldn't be doing, because I'm not defining my character and Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I am acting out one more time. I'm not willing to go way deep again. I only did half, maybe a quarter of the steps. And even then, I wasn't rigorous honest. I didn't have rigorous honesty. God, there's a lot of time left. Jesus. Anyway, I like to talk. Don't lie. You know that. I won't go over. I know this is a speaker meeting. Finally, I go to meetings and sit back in chair, and some people tell me, man, this ain't no speaker meeting, man. Shut up. Or me and Nate, I hang out. You know, I got to hang out with my brothers today, Chris and Nate. You know, we were hanging out. And we just, you know, we talk. We talk about recovery and life. And I'm grateful to have you guys in my life, you know. And I have a lot of gals in here that I've leaned on over the years that have been real good friends of mine. They taught me how to be a better person. And they showed me more about what intimacy is and to help me prepare in life so I can have a healthy relationship. They were smart enough not to get in a relationship with me, right? But they knew. I didn't see it. Didn't know. So here I am. I'm in San Diego. I'm doing what I need to do. Spending a lot of money, and I hit a big old jackpot at like 20 some pound. It was at $2,400 or something. And I looked at my brother-in-law and I said, hey, we're so close to Mexico. Let's go to Mexico. Because Mexico sounds like I love Latino women. Oh, I love, oh my God, I love any women. But anyway. I love Latinos. Let's go to Mexico. He's like, let's not go to Mexico. I was married to a Latino for 23 years. My brother-in-law used to tease me and say, you're almost Mexican. And I said, what are you talking about almost, man? I've been married for 23 years to one. I'm freaking Mexican, okay? And so we went down and I talked him into it because I'm a really good salesman. I'm in the auto industry and I can sell anything now. I'm finally using those, by the way, good homeless skills in the auto industry, and it's too easy. That business is too easy for Glenn. I don't need to, like, study. I just know how to size people up and take them off. That's just what I do. And I'm not saying that because this is what I've done. It was just my makeup. I just knew how to intuitively know how to handle people. When I got the buy from them, I knew how to position myself. I knew how to ask the right questions. I knew how to close the deal. That's what I did in the streets. It was no different. It was no different. Okay? We get down to Mexico, and we go into, of course, the strip club. Who's going to go to Mexico and not go there, right? Yeah. So we go in there, and the first thing I do over 4 years was without even thinking about it. I knew I was going to drink when we got there. And even though my brother-in-law was telling me, man, please don't drink, we're only going to be here for a little while. Well, 2 days later, all that money I had was gone. It was horrible. I had, you know, I'm not going to say I blacked out and remember everything I did, because I don't black out. I always remember. Right? I do. Right? That's just the kind of guy I am. We come back across the border, we head home, and I got, you know, I'm like, I'm not telling my wife, but I've had 8 years of sobriety, right? I'm not telling her that. And I had to live with that lie and that double lifestyle again for another year or so. And she finally adapted to my alcoholism because it wasn't that bad at that time. It manifested slowly. It took off for 2 nights, and then I was able to drink on the weekend. I was able to just drink at social events. But then it started escalating. It started escalating over time. Within a 7-year period, I was already drinking whiskey in the morning. Then the sun came up as soon as that door closed, and I was drinking whiskey at work. I was drinking whiskey It was whiskey and beer chaser. Isn't it the other way around? Right? It's like, drink a beer, take a shot. Well, I'm drinking whiskey and taking a shot. So I'm a beer. Like, and I'm just fully addicted to alcohol. Now see, this is what I'm talking about, how it matters. It matters in the different areas of our life, and we don't see it happening. We think because we don't have one problem, we won't have another. I have an addictive personality. I have a mental obsession. I have a physical allergy. If anything goes into this body that I like, I'm going to do more. And it's not going to matter what fits in my life. It's not going to matter how good she is. It's not going to matter how faithful they've been. It's not going to matter. It doesn't matter how much money I have. It doesn't care. It just sees go. Now. Right now. Just go. It's go time. More time. But what happens is I can't control it. I don't know how to control it. You know? I surpass this. Right? The two most important questions. Right here. I don't need 20 questions. I don't need a book to tell me if I have a disease. All I got to do is read this. And if I'm honest with myself, and that's me, it's not probably, I am. Right? But there's different forms of alcoholism, right? We see it. You know, we got those people that are moderate drinkers. They drink only on the weekend, but when they drink, they get fucked up, just like we do, right? They drink with impunity, and then they get their life together, and they go on and get busy again. And then we got the drinker that's the hard drinker, right? They get hooked on alcohol, they drink their life into oblivion, and then they get sober, and all of a sudden they straighten out, and they don't have all this stuff that I have when I get sober. Worry, remorse, anxiety, stress, you know, self-obsession, self-delusion, inferiority complex. All that stuff, I have that when I don't drink. So my life is unmanageable, with or without alcohol. It doesn't matter. Alcohol is a subtle soul. It tells us that in the book. Right? It's my behavior, my thought process, the way I act, how I respond to people. That's me. All day long. I don't need alcohol to act that way. I did it for 8 years. Sober, dry, thinking that I could outrun this thing. I couldn't outrun it. I tried to outrun it. When I got here, and so I left, I came back in 2012. Small attempt, didn't last long. Left a year and a half later, came back in 2014. I had just been diagnosed. A lot of you know my story. I've been living with cancer or blood cancer my life for some time. And it was the second time that it came back. The first time I had it was in 07. I was sober at that time. We dealt with it. It went into remission. It went 8 years. I got it again in my throat. And they had to do radiation, so I couldn't drink. I couldn't. But I didn't want to come here. The last place I wanted to come was here. Right? Because I knew that I needed to go to stay here now. I already know how much work needed to be done. And I wasn't willing just yet. I was that last gasper they talked about. Trying to suck out the last bit of Glenn's will into the life, you know, that have already blown up so many relationships, right? And some of you learn that stuff way early. You 30-year-olds. God bless you, man. You're here? Wow. I couldn't get here at 30. There's a lot of them in this room. They know who they are. 40-year-olds too. Right? I take to the hill, right? To the hill. Oh, man. So, 2014, I get cancer. We do the radiation. I can't drink. And I start thinking I'm sober for about, you know, 8 weeks. This thing's got to heal. The pain, it's in my life. It's in my way. It's in my way. You know, I can't drink, so I might as well do something. So I start going to meetings. And the seed was planted. Something happened in 2014 where I got the desire to want to stop drinking, but the problem was I wasn't willing to do the conceited part, right? To complete the feat that Stephon talks about, right? In the very first part of step one, it says, who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one. I'm the practically no one guy. That's me.
So I go ahead and I get busy, you know. I come to meetings, but I'm drinking all the time. It's a perfect excuse. She's still with me, and I'm hoping that, you know, she doesn't really find out. I got bottles spreading out all over the house. I'm described as the real alcoholic, as the description is, in Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, hiding the bottles all over the house and trying to manipulate, just doing all that stuff. And there I am, thinking I can do this one more time, and my life is completely over. I don't see it, right? I don't want to look at it that way, but it is completely over. I don't get another DUI, but I keep drinking in the car. Right? I'm doing all this stuff, but I'm not getting caught. And I got fear in me that is magnified like no other, because I'm worried that I'm going to get busted, and then there goes the job, and then I'm in the toilet, and now I'm a low bottom instead of a high bottom. What's wrong with me? Think about that. That is so crazy. All I had to do was say, okay, God, here I am. Take me as I am. I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll do what they want me to do. You hear that saying all the time, do what we do, if you want what we have, do what we do. Right? But they never say it like that. They go, if you want what we have, do what we do. Right? They get down, nasty about it, and it's the truth. If I don't do what others are doing here, if I don't do monkey see, monkey do, I'm not going to stay. That's my story. I will not stay. I will leave you. Even after all the things that I've done here that are powerful in my life, I will forget, like page 24 described in the second paragraph. I won't remember. If I take my will back, I will not remember how bad it was a week ago, a month ago, a day ago. I will lose the power of choice. I had to take that choice off the table for a relapse like me. I got a sponsor who got in my face about that. He goes, why is that a choice? Why don't you just not make it a choice today? Why don't you make Alcoholics Anonymous your choice? And not make it a choice of freedom and going out to a bar and watching how the whoopee parties are going. And why don't you take that off the table for right now and just focus on how to be a recovering man? You know? And it was powerful. So I start doing the work. I go to the conceited part. I concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic and my life is unmanageable with and without drugs and alcohol. Right? And I start doing the work. And you know what? That first year was hard. My ex-wife, she left me, who I was married to for 23 years. She left, and it destroyed me. It broke me in places that I can't even describe. It was physically and mentally challenging for me because I had depended on her income. I had depended on her just being at the house. It was my way of validating who I was, even though it was a trashful marriage, and it was horrible from both ends. We were nasty to each other. We were not faithful to each other. But it gave me a reason. It validated me as a person. I needed that in my life. As sick as it was, it had to be there for me. And once I started getting involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember taking my first cake, my first share cake. So I got here in 2014, started sobering up a little bit. Finally, December 1st of 2015 is my sobriety date. I've been sober a little over 6 years now. Continuous sobriety, working in active and Alcoholics Anonymous, helping others, doing the deal, staying in the pocket, going to a lot of meetings. I go to a lot of meetings. Maybe some of you don't need to go to as many meetings as I do, but I need every one of them, man. I don't know which one I need, but I go enough of them to know that I need to be there. And every time I leave that meeting, I always come out happier than I was when I got there, because I got it put together. And I start doing the real work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I start listening to speaker tapes like Bob Darrell and Sandy Beach, and I'm doing this on my off time because I don't really get to go to a meeting every day. And I'm trying to do this while I'm doing 60 hours a week in car business. I'm renting out my homes. I'm renting out my rooms in my home so I can make ends meet because she just left everything. And I'm trying to uncover and discover and discard the itch in my life while I'm trying to manage this new life that's going on in my life, and I can't do it. It's bigger than me. So once I got through some of the steps, I started to see that how important it was for me to let go. And how important it was for me to surrender my life to a God that I didn't understand. And I didn't matter anymore because my will, when I take my will over my grasp, my life, every single time, with and without alcohol, that's just who I is. Right? And I get started in the process of recovery. My first year, I remember taking it. my cake, and I remember saying, I hate my life right now. This is it? This is what you people promised me? Happy, joyous, and free? I wasn't very happy. I wasn't very joyous, but I was free from alcohol. And God was working on me. He was working that third step in my life. He was giving me an idea of what it is and how powerful He was to become in my life and what He needed to be to do to stay here. And as I kept doing the work, see, I didn't stop. I didn't stop just for because I started getting a taste of what it is that my life was going to look like. I started digging more. I started doing more. I started getting out of the way. I was taking commitments on Friday night. Who does an 8 o'clock meeting on Friday night? Nobody wants that meeting, but I did it. I took a meeting on Sundays. Every Sunday, 52 speakers a year, I took that meeting because it got me out of self. I was scared to death that nobody would come, but it helped me get out to a lot of meetings and promote the meeting and be in the service area and start to know what my recovery was really about. Even though I didn't understand the process, I was doing the work. I was getting out of the way and doing the work. Because that's what 4 through 10 does. It gets me out of the way. It gets me out of the way. I don't want to get out of the way. I like my life drama, you know? That's the way I live. I was going to a therapist at the time, and she was describing to me some of the things that I didn't want to hear. Like, number one, you have no coping skills. Oh, thank you so much. No coping skills. You have a mind of a teenager at 54 years old. A mind of a teenager. That hurt. That really hurt. And then she begged me to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was the best thing I ever did. All I had to do was get out of the way and let you happen. I had to get out of the way enough to where I could start working the process. Something new in my life. Something meaningful. Because, see, self-knowledge didn't work for me. I didn't really like reading the book. I didn't enjoy, like, you know, doing all the stuff work the way that it needed to be done. But I did it anyway because I had an 8th grade education. See, I can talk that game. I'm a good hustler, right? I have an intuitive mind, right? I can snap to it real quick, believe me. You know, like, I can fake it real quick, right? To some of that acting skills coming out, right? But the real core issue is, I'm as dumb as a square, man. I don't know nothing about reading and comprehension and all that. I had to learn how to do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous by working the steps that opened the doors for me to get involved in the book and book studies and to start listening to speakers that motivated me to point me in the right direction because I needed help. I was dying inside. Even though I was sober, I was dying. I was hurting. I had pain. I had loneliness. I had despair in my life. And I wanted to connect with you people, but I didn't know how. Because I lacked that thing of trust and intimacy that I never was seeing. And then God was just putting people in my life like crazy, man. I'm hiking with girls that I want to go out with, that they don't want to go out with me, and they're teaching me how to be a friend, they're teaching me how to be a better man, and they're talking to me about these things. I learned how to, like, trust them with some of the stuff that I was doing. And you know what? It seemed powerful. I got to share something with someone one time about how I was listening to this speaker tape called Forgiveness. It was on the 4th and 5th step, Bob Darrell. He's talking about forgiveness, love, and resentment. And I got to talk to her about that tape, and she was going through something. I had no idea she was going through this, right? And I went ahead and I talked to her about it, and she says, you know, I'm going to go over to that tape because I'm really pissed off at my ex-boyfriend right now. I'm just like, really? Oh, I'm going to kill him. So she goes home and listens to it. We get back together and we start hiking again. And she tells me, starts crying, that she had a spiritual experience while listening to that tape and what that is that she needed to do in her life so she can let go of that. And she had 9 years of sobriety at the time, was living with her mom, was going through a tough time because they had broken up. And she felt like very insecure one more time. But all started falling apart. Everything she worked for was involved in this other human being. And she separated herself from, you know, her God and became all involved in this relationship. And it murdered her. And when she listened to that, and she broke down and started crying to me and started telling me what it is that she did And then she called this person and was able to meet with them and make an amends, and she was free. But then 2 months she had her own place. She was living a better life. She was free from something that was haunting her. Because I didn't know, by doing the work that I was doing, was going to share with another person. I didn't know, but God knew. He was putting her in my life to build me as the man that I want to become today, while I was doing something for her. One alcoholic talking to another. That's how we do it here. I don't know how many times I sat in my Denny's or the little taco place down the street or whatever, you know, and just sharing about life experiences. I've gotten more out of that than anything by working the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's important that I do the work and I stay here. It's important that I learn how to help others. Everybody has a maximum useful capacity in them. It may not be sponsorable, but it may be helpful to someone else in their recovery. You know? Your journey's here. My journey is here. My life didn't end when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Even though my perception, I felt like it was over, it was just beginning. And I didn't see it. But where I'm at today, I'm going to talk a little bit about where I'm at today. I got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to end on time because I don't want to be accused of this seat. I'm going over. And where I'm at in my life today, I did a big book workshop about a year ago. And my finances were still a little bit messed up. No, they were pretty messed up. And I was avoiding the situation of going back and cleaning up my mess. I cleaned up my mess. Those personal relationships were easy to clean up. Because I learned enough here that I knew what I needed to do to stay here, and I got involved with those people. I made things right with my ex-wife, my son, my family members, and all that by being a good brother and showing up and doing the things I need to do and being a good ex-husband by telling the truth and being able to sit with her and listen to her side of the mess, you know, that was going on in her life and just position myself, right, to be a kind person. I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So here I am. I'm doing the work, and as I can see, I'm still holding on to my stuff. I'm in my fifth year of recovery, and I'm thinking, I got to do something different, man, because I know what the book says. If I don't change my ways, I will surely come drink again. And I'm a little afraid of that. I don't want to experience that. So I get this big book guy. His name's Kelly Rod, and I start the process of recovery with that big book workshop. And it took me through the steps like I'd never seen it before. It showed me where all the requirements are, the directions, and all the little things I needed to know, the third step promises, the ninth step promises. I mean, it showed me, like, it opened up big doors for me to like, embrace where I was in my life at the time to do better. So I went back, I called those creditors up one by one. I had all the fear how to do it. I asked my sponsor how to get it done, and we did that. Went back, I called those guys up, and I said, hey, what do I owe you? And they said this, I said that, and we met in the middle, and I paid them. And I got through that, you know. And when I did that, my credit score went up. I was able to do stuff now. I had a little more freedom in my life to be able to get my financial stuff in order, because it was still kind of messy. And through that process, I was able to go ahead and take it to the next step. My home was in bankruptcy for years. It was a mess. I was able to get it out of bankruptcy, put it in my name, take the ex-wife off that house. I was able to get my affairs in order so I'm not leaving a mess to my kids. Right? Because that stuff's important to me today. I'm a 60-year-old man. It's time to grow up. If you're having a hard time growing up, just let go. Let God. He's abundantly in love with you. You can be pissed off. I've heard somebody say, I'm so mad at God. You can be angry with him. He don't care. He don't care. He's got that much love. And if you don't know who he is, it's okay. You don't have to. He's powerful. He has worked miracles in my life. He has put me together. He has given me strength and hope when I had despair. He has given me purpose in my life. He has helped me understand who I am today, and I never knew that person. I never knew who I was. And I can say today, honestly, too, I love the person I've become today. Said I wasn't crying. I love the person I'm becoming today. But I don't take credit for it. I have to do the work. I've got to take the action in my life. I must get involved with Alcoholics Anonymous or I won't last. Anyway, that's all I got. I love all you guys.